Hi, Megan. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad we were able to connect. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to talk to you. I love when we just sort of accidentally stumble on a great topic, which is kind of what I feel like is happened for tonight's conversation. We just kind of accidentally got talking about it, but I think that this is such a huge topic for a lot of our clients, or just people out there who might be having something else internally going on that's causing some sleep issues. So I'm excited to talk with you tonight because I really do feel like there are times when we work with families, with children, or even adults too, who have some internal issues that might be causing some of their or contributing to some of their sleep struggles. And that's not really what our sleep plans are designed to help with. They really are more to make behavioral changes, schedule changes, and when people might be battling things like iron levels, eczema, reflux, GERD, then that might mean that it goes beyond us. But sometimes when they go in to their doctor, they don't always get the answers that they're looking for or are hoping for. Just had this conversation with somebody today, and we have some suspected low iron levels that might be causing some of the residual issues for sleep, and I know sometimes that happens. So I'm excited for you to be here tonight because you had mentioned that your son had eczema and that you were able to help him get rid of that without using any medicine. And I want you to share with us how you did that, because I am dying to know what you did to make that work. But first, I want you to share with us how the eczema or other internal things for your son were affecting him, and what was recommended to you to do for it.
Yeah, so it actually was kind of a little bit of a complicated long journey for us, because him being my first son, I had never personally experienced eczema in my own life. So I mean, I knew about it in my medical career, but never had to like personally deal with it to really kind of know the struggles, the ins and outs of it. And the interesting thing is that they say up to 25% of children actually at some point will develop some sort of what they call atopic dermatitis, which is a big fancy word for eczema. And then they say
Wow,
within,
I didn't know it was that high. Okay. Yeah, that's good to
up
know.
to 25%. And then within that 25%, it's an estimated about 60% or so that people with eczema will actually get it within their first year of life. So that's a pretty significant amount if you think about just, all the other things that are going on in a young, baby's life. And then you throw this on there and maybe parents that don't know that much about it. So I kind of fell into that boat. And so I had to really dig kind of deep, do a little bit of research. Obviously my medical background helped, but I was not a huge fan of trying to use a lot of just medications and steroids and things like that. I wanted to really kind of try to figure out what was the root cause of this, which can be a very hard thing to do in eczema. So it took a while, and I won't say that I didn't ever have to use medicine, but I used it at a minimum for sure, just because that's what I believe in. There's a place and a time for medicine, but there's also a place and a time to kind of eliminate other things as well. So Emmett kind of just started having like kind of weird red patches like on the backs of his legs, behind his knees specifically. And I just kind of would him like itching and scratching, and he would say, "Mama, this hurts. Mama, this hurts." Well, then it got to the point where it was actually like bleeding and cracking. So then at that point, I was kind of behind the eight ball because I really didn't notice it until it got to that point. Then we got it to the point where it was not only red and cracking, but kind of like oozing and kind of weeping like a serous fluid. And so again, I was behind the eight ball, and I had to at one point use the conventional medication such as a topical steroid to get it to a point where obviously there wasn't going to be an underlying infection aspect to it, just to kind of really decrease that inflammation in the area. And then I was able to kind of move into more, I would say, like homeopathic, holistic, or just a much more gentler approach to treating his eczema. And
And
that's kind of.
how And how old was Emmett when this first happened?
He was about a year, year and a half. So he was also, it presented a little bit later for him, but two and under is typically when it presents. And they say also that around the age of five and under is the most common. So after the age of five, we really don't see it that much. And if you do see it, it's likely going to be something that you will have throughout your entire life.
He was saying, obviously old enough to say to you that this is hurting, this is bothering him. Did you see any issues with his sleep in re because of it?
Yeah, so he would wake up intermittently at night. I can't say that it was a ton, but it was enough to be disruptive. And so you and I both know that basically our body is regulated by light and darkness, right? And that we naturally produce this hormone called melatonin. And what that melatonin does is it cues our body, hey, it's going to be nighttime and that we need to prepare for sleeping. But the other thing that it also does is it actually starts to lower our core temperature so that we can sleep more soundly and get into that deep like cycle of sleep. But what that also means is that prior to going to bed, about an hour to 2 hours before, our heat likes to dissipate through basically the periphery, so our extremities and our skin. So that's when actually the itchiness and the irritation actually shows up the most in children because of that heat factor. So that is typically where I would see it in him was right before bed, and then it was just kind of a delay getting him to bed. So,
Right. So then, in regards to, so that was where you were seeing it affect him. And then obviously he was old enough to verbalize to you that he was uncomfortable and that it was hurting. Can you share with us what you did to help once you got the initial inflammation and irritation under control? I know you mentioned that you had to use a little steroid cream for that, but then you shifted away. What did you end up doing?
So there's actually a lot of really good moisturizing creams, but the most important thing is that I had to basically like get a plan and really kind of stick to it and make sure that I was following it because I needed to basically prep his skin for this moisturization so that we wouldn't get back into that spot of the cracking, the bleeding, the weeping, and just like that highly inflamed area. So basically, we love to take really hot showers in our house and baths, and so that was a big adjustment for us. So we had to basically we had to make sure that we were getting a daily bath or shower, but we had to make sure that the water wasn't hot, and sometimes we even used cool water. And so I would let him sit in there for 15 minutes or so, basically so that there was nothing irritating as far as like the hot water, which can be very, very drying to our skin, especially in the winter months. So that was the first thing I did. I changed our water temperature, which I mean, it's pretty simple to do, right? Might not be the most comfortable thing for adults to take a cooler shower or bath, but it's definitely helpful. The other thing that I learned was after bath time, you don't really need to dry off that well. Yes, I wanted to get the excess water off of him, but the fact that I would just like pat his skin with a clean towel actually left a little bit of moisture on his body. And what that did is it helped to whether I was applying moisturizing lotions or creams, or I had to apply medication at any point, it actually helps absorb better and stay on their skin a little bit longer. So cool baths or showers, not drying off completely. And then the third step was I really had to make sure that I was liberally applying moisturizer all over him, not just to the areas of where he had the eczema, because I wanted to lock in that good moisture. And so I also really began to do a lot of research in as far as what creams really were good, what were safe. Because that was obviously my number one thing is I don't want to irritate him anymore. I don't want to cause him any more discomfort. So I really kind of dug in and found some really good creams that kind of locked in the lipid factor of the skin so that there was not the drying aspect to it. And those specifically, one is called Vani cream, so Vani and then cream. And the other one is called CeraVe, and it's CERA and then VE and then cream. And those both have a very heavy lipid content to them, so which is really like good fat that basically I'm slathering my kid with. And that really helped lock in that moisture, decrease that inflammation. Just those three things in and of itself.
Made a difference. And
Yeah.
I'll put, for those listening, I'll put a link to those creams, and I'll highlight what Megan has been kind enough to share in the notes here on the podcast. Vanny cream, I've never heard of that. But makes sense. Totally with a higher lipid content. I mean, makes sense, right? And from a sleep standpoint too, I mean, one thing we do talk with our families about, especially as their child is getting older and having solid food, is fat content in their food, right? I mean, so because we know how much that fat content can help them sleep well. Now, obviously, everything is within reason. We're not saying, go give your baby a whole bunch of fatty food. But having a higher fat content in their food really can help promote better sleep. As a matter of fact, if I'm working with a baby or a young toddler, and we're seeing some like weird night wake ups, that's one of the first things I'll talk about is like, what are you feeding them? And what I'm looking for is, are they doing a good fat content? So having a cream with a high lipid content makes sense.
It's lipids, ceramides, and honestly, those are pretty accessible. I mean, I have found them at Walgreens, Target. I've ordered them off of Amazon, and they're pretty inexpensive as well. And the other thing is that a lot of them are recommended by the there is actually a National Eczema Association. So they mention them on there, and then as well as the American Academy of Dermatology, they also are very encouraging of the use of those products as well.
Right. Yeah. And so it started with in the evening, prepping him with all the right things, cool bath, patting the skin dry, not drying off a lot, and then loading up the cream. And then what were there other things that you were doing as well?
So I really kind of had to take a look at the other products in our home just in general. So what types of soaps were we using? What types of fragrances were in our products? I'm pretty specific on the ingredients in our food and the products that we use in general, but I really had to kind of dig deep and say, all right, what else could be a possible trigger for him that could be very irritating to his skin? So getting rid of anything that had like heavy perfume or cologne, any scented lotions, even things like clothing that we typically think are very comfortable. For example, like wool. We do a lot of outdoor activities in the winter, and a good wool base layer was kind of a necessity. But I had learned for him that was very irritating to his skin. So there are numerous triggers. And once you start identifying those triggers, and keeping those in mind, you can almost kind of decrease the amount of flares that you have. Not that you're not ever going to have one, but it will definitely help decrease the number of flares.
Right. Well, and you say wool, and I was just in a consultation earlier today, and a wool, no, I don't think it's 100% wool, but a partially wool sleep sack is becoming a very, very popular sleep sack for parents to use with their babies because, it's breathable, but you can kind of wear it year round. I get, and so, I mean, so for a baby who has that issue, they wouldn't probably even think that that might be part of the, reason for flare-ups.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that can trigger it. I mean, it can be as simple as just like the change in weather or the season. Or if you're in a really high humidity area and then you go to a low, I mean, there's a number of factors. It can be irritants like cleaning solutions that they come in contact to after you wipe a counter down. I mean, all sorts of chemicals, obviously. Environmental allergies, smoking, lots of dust, pet dander, excuse me. So just so many things that you really have to start paying attention to, and really kind of noticing, hey, when he's around, Aunt Susie who smokes, he tends to get really irritated skin. Or when he's in a really hot, humid climate, does his skin tend to flare up as well? So just kind of noticing the basics, it was really helpful for us.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I can definitely see that. I heard you mention things about like his diet. Did you find anything nutritionally that you had to make adjustments for him to help with his eczema?
So I personally did make some adjustments to his diet. I will tell you, though, that the majority of dermatologists do not recommend that because it is very hard to specify with foods what exactly would be causing it.
Right.
And is it more of like a GI irritation, or is it truly like an immune response? So it's kind of hard to trigger, but you can kind of see patterns in your own kids. And so I started eliminating things like dairy in him and found that was very helpful. Again, it's not recommended by the majority of healthcare providers to take an entire food group out of children, but for us, it worked. So I will say that I noticed if, you know, he went to childcare for the day and he had, you know, cheese in something or milk in something, a couple days later, I would see that on him. And so I just became very strict in the fact of, hey, like, we're just going to kind of stay away from dairy, see what happens. And things did get better. And we did actually go do skin testing. It's not the funnest process. It's about 100 and something little pricks on your little child's body. So it's not a pleasant experience, but it can be helpful in determining some triggers for them, such as environmental or like metals, things like that, if they get to a point where they really are having severe cases of eczema.
Right. So you're from what I'm hearing you say, it can be, you know, something that is environmental, or it can be something internal. And what would you recommend to a family with a child who is struggling with eczema?
So I think the first thing is that you have to look at is like, is this mild? Meaning, is there just like, you know, a slight irritation to the skin? It's reddened, it's kind of rough, flaky. Or is it more moderate to severe? And the fact of like the case of my little guy, when I first experienced it, it's cracking, it's bleeding, it's, you know, weeping, oozing. So if you're in that more moderate to severe, I say definitely you need to see a dermatologist. And that is when I would say more traditional medications such as a topical steroid would be used, or like a Zyrtec or a Claritin being taken orally, just to kind of get things under control. If it's a more mild case, then I think starting with those good fatty moisturizers, creams, the cool baths, anything that you can buy over the counter as far as prescriptions, such as like a 1% hydrocortisone cream, can honestly make a world of difference in a kid that's just having an acute flare up. So I think you really have to look, is there the possibility that there could be an underlying infection with this? Then you need to be a little bit more aggressive. If it's more mild, I think let's try to identify the triggers and use, you know, a little less extreme measures to prevent that irritation and not introduce any other unnecessary medications as needed.
Right. Yeah. Well, and obviously we are, you know, not by any means trying to say over this, we're doing any diagnosing at all. Of course, we're just trying to share your own experience and also coming from a medical background, you know, what a parent could do in going forward with this. And my professional experience, thankfully my children have not struggled with this, but I definitely have seen clients. And if it is significant enough, it does seem like there needs to be a couple points of contact that might need to be explored with families in order to figure out what is going to be the treatment that's going to work best for their child. Meaning it's not a one size fits all approach.
Exactly.
It does need to be, you know, explored, like you said, with the dermatologist. I've had other family members I've worked with that have done allergy testing on the back, or even like the blood test too, to see what kind of allergies are going on. Obviously, all this being done via their medical provider to get to the bottom line of it. But one thing that, you know, I see, and I was actually just reading a study a month or so ago about this, that they're finding like a link between, you know, this would probably be more with people with more chronic eczema as children or as adults too, but a link in like circadian rhythm disruption with chronic eczema.
Yeah,
and it somehow, yeah.
I think I've probably seen something similar to that, because that literature is starting to become more prevalent. So definitely know what you're talking about there.
Right. Yeah. Well, and people that are, you know, having, I mean, the obvious can be like, I'm having a flare up and I'm itchy. And clearly, if we're itchy, that's uncomfortable and it's hard to sleep, right? But even for people like that, they'll say, I'm not actually having a flare up, but I'm still not sleeping well. Like, I just have kind of chronic poor sleep, even when I'm not having flare ups. And there being some kind of internal link there. And as I've always said, you know, over the 8 years being in the field of sleep, the research, I mean, it's a new field, and what we're learning is just growing every day. And I mean, in another year or two, there'll probably be more information uncovered on things like eczema or you know, even reflux or some of the other things that we see that cause sleep disturbance. And you know, there's the obvious reason, which is discomfort, right? But then there's those underlying things that you have to kind of wonder, okay, what else could be underneath this that could be keeping them kind of in the chronic state of poor sleep?
Right.
And these being things that, you know, some of our clients see for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking about this. I appreciate it. As always, our common interest and connection is our fascination with the science of sleep. And it never bores me. It's always so interesting to just learn how it all works together. Makes sense, right? I mean, it's crazy how some people don't realize that of the pillars of health, it is kind of one of the three most important things you'll do. We know this because we talk about it all the time, and we work with people who don't sleep well, and we know what that looks like. But I think for some people, they don't realize just how valuable and important for your health your sleep is. And so I appreciate you sharing in my sleep science nerdiness that I could devour
Yeah,
forever
I love it.
and talk. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. This has been super helpful. I will put some information in the notes about some of the things that Megan shared with us today, so that if you're yourself or your child is struggling, you can do some more research and hopefully get some answers and some comfort brought to your family. So thanks, Megan, so much for joining me. I appreciate
Yeah,
it.
thanks.
Hi, welcome to Sleep Well's podcast. I am your host, Shannon Glenn. Today, I sat down and spoke with one of my team members, Megan Keevan. She is also a nurse practitioner at a very busy emergency department in a very busy city that she does as her full-time job. And so I asked her to join me today because in conversation that I had had with her, I had heard her mention that her son had struggled with eczema and that it had caused some difficulty with his sleep. And this is something that I have seen fairly often, or more often, I guess, than I would have expected for some of my other clients to have their children have eczema and they are also having sleep struggles. So I wanted her to come on and give some reasoning behind how that happens and also some tips on what to do to help your child if they are struggling with eczema. So I hope you enjoy the little episode today.